The New York Jets have two coordinators. A week ago when we did this pod, they didn't have any, but they are ready, locked in, ready to go. Plenty of other hires to go. We're going to talk all about it. We're going to talk about the Super Bowl as well and past Jets offensive coordinators and where they are landing, because it's looking up for them as well. But most of this show will be dedicated to Frank Reich, the new Jets offensive coordinator hire. I'm Tim McMaster along with Zach Rosenblatt. Thanks for joining us on Flight Plan. If you're checking us out on YouTube, the Baggage Handlers, thanks for joining us. Wherever you're listening, watching, give us a good review and thumbs up and all that stuff. Zach, I'm coming to you from the office with surprisingly bad Wi-Fi. So hopefully things go well, but if it gets a little jumpy on this side, you can carry things. How are you?
Well, it'll be a good, anomaly or whatever, or metaphor for how the Jets coaching search just went a little bumpy, a little choppy at spots. But, you know, at the end, they maybe landed in the right place. We'll see. But yeah, I'm happy that we finally got this done. Now it'll just be filling out the staff, which, while important, isn't like, you know, breaking news, stop what you're doing. Whereas it's been like a pretty busy couple of weeks on this beat, which I did not expect when the season ended. I thought that would be like once free agency started, I thought we would get past the Super Bowl. But here we are. The Jets made some news. They hired Frank Reich, who had planned on retiring or was retired. And now he's back to help out his old buddy, his teammate from 30 years ago.
So let's obviously start with Reich. And I guess my first question for you is, you know, there was this whole long thing, Tanner Engstrand, he was going to stick around, Reich was going to come in. That blew up, for lack of a better term. I think that's a pretty fair assessment. Yeah. It blew up. And then they had to go through this entire hiring process and the interviews. But from a month ago, 3 weeks ago, yeah, it was always going to be Frank Reich, right?
Yeah. He was the one they were doing the all out. You know, Aaron Glenn was going all in, full court press, trying to get Frank Reich hired. He was trying to hire him before Tanner Engstrand was leaving. They were trying to pull the, well, we won't have to do the Rooney Rule interviews if we just hire Reich as a senior offensive assistant and let him call plays. But ultimately, like, once they did part ways with Tanner, like, he was the one they wanted. I think fans started getting antsy because it took a few days. From what I understand, and I believe Boomer Esiason, who's really close with Frank Reich, so he'll be a show to listen to as things happen. But he had alluded to Frank being on vacation, which I believe was correct. And so, you know, the first day of in-person interviews is Greg Roman and Daryl Bevel, where there was no mention of Frank Reich. So everybody's like, what's happening? I wound up reporting the next day that he was in town for a second interview and that I was going to wrap up pretty quickly. I think him being in person pretty much was all you needed to hear to seal it. The thing was, like, Aaron Glenn was, you know, again, full court press. He's like, in his head, he wanted somebody to be the head coach of the offense. He wanted to go to somebody he trusted with the experience of doing such a thing. Someone who has some history of success in the league, both with quarterbacks and calling plays. And we can get into like the recent history and why it's not as good. But Aaron Glenn saw somebody that he trusted and wanted to kind of bank his, you know, his job on, because this season is going to be deciding whether Aaron Glenn is still the coach or not. And so your offensive coordinator, if you're a defensive play caller, is the most important thing you could hire. And so Frank Reich, I think there's pros and cons, but at the end of the day, this is the guy they wanted. I imagine he's getting paid pretty handsomely, because a year ago, he literally said in interviews, like, he was retired until Andrew Luck called him and asked for his help. And he said, okay, I'll coach for a year. I'll be the interim coach at Stanford. And he was, and the plan was to be retired again. Like, he told everybody that. And then Aaron Glenn came calling. So he's listening to his friends. He can't quite get away. He doesn't feel like someone who is planning on being here. And I haven't heard this from him or anything, but he's 64 years old and has already basically been retired. So I can't imagine he views this as a like 3-year journey, but you know, Aaron Glenn is bringing in somebody for now to try and fix an offense that was bad last year, I think largely because of the quarterbacks, but you know, that's where we're at.
It has to be, I would imagine, because looking at things, and we'll get into the potential quarterbacks for 2026 in this show, but when you think about like 2027 being the year with like the draft pick, maybe quarterback, whoever that is, yeah, I would imagine that it's at least a 2-year commitment. But that said, we had talked about how this was not a job that anybody really on the rise or like an offensive star right now in the game would be interested in, because you have a head coach on the hot seat, you don't have a quarterback, you have Garrett Wilson, you maybe have Breece Hall, but like there's a lot missing here. So did all that make Frank Reich like the guy, because he checks the boxes of having success in his career, he's been a head coach, and maybe he just doesn't care about that other stuff because it is a short-term engagement?
Yeah, it's a good question. I listened to Boomer Esiason a bit yesterday, because like I think they were college roommates at Maryland. So like they've known each other a long time, and Boomer was kind of like half-heartedly alluding to things that were happening without saying them because he couldn't say a lot. And then once I reported that Frank Reich was in town, he was a little more open, and he said some stuff that I thought was interesting about, you know, he spoke with Frank a lot about his honest opinions about where the Jets are at. Boomer obviously knows it really well. He's in this market. And, you know, I wrote down some of the quotes. He said he's doing this to support his buddy and somebody he believes in. It's Aaron Glenn. I think there's been a lot of talk about like, okay, he could have just hired his interim coach. Like if Aaron Glenn gets fired, then this is an obvious one. Maybe that happens, but that's not like why he took the job. He didn't take this thinking to be that coach. This is where he said, the guy I know does things for friends with a level of humility and support and a lack of bat stabbing and shiving. Any questions that were asked of me, I gave him honest answers back to both Frank and his wife. I gave him honest answers. He watches, he knows everything that's going on. And Boomer told him like, you got to get yourself a quarterback and figure out what's going on with that. And so like Frank didn't come into this blind, like he did the proper research, but at the end of the day, he clearly believes in Aaron Glenn, or he believes in the paycheck he's getting. But I don't think Frank is shallow in that way. I do think he's everything you hear. I don't know. You can find somebody that would have a bad thing to say about Frank Reich as a person. Like, he's a known good human being. And I think he saw a friend who needed his help, and he believes in Aaron Glenn. And so he's the offensive coordinator, and you don't have to believe in Glenn, and you don't even have to believe in Reich, but you know, there's something to be said about at least getting somebody with the level of experience that he has, which is significant, and him willing to take this job as opposed to going off into the sunset.
Okay. So he's taking the job, and maybe it's short term, maybe it's a season or two. You would think when the Jets are looking long term, though, they want to have the next guy, ideally, right? So let's talk about Frank Reich's staff. And do you see a world where the next guy could be part of that staff? And maybe it's a situation where like the type of people Frank Reich brings in to be on his offensive staff have the potential to, you know, the cream rises to the top, and they could be the at some point offensive coordinator.
Yeah. I mean, in that scenario, that would mean that it worked the first year for sure. And then you're going into the next year with this staff back. And so let's under that assumption. Yeah. I think there are some options,
a lot of assumptions. Yeah.
Yeah, it is. And you have to, I mean, we don't know how it's going to go. Like I said to Connor the other day, like all the evidence in history points to this failing just based on like how his first season went, what he did with his staff. Like there's not a lot of precedent for this working, but if it does and it can, yeah, I think there's been a lot of conversation about Bevel and Greg Roman because those guys came in person. And if Frank Reich was always going to be the guy, then why are you doing that in person if not to try and hire them in other roles? And I think there's something to that. I do believe that was at least talked about it. We haven't heard anything yet. Greg Roman out of those two would be the most intriguing to me, because if you bring him in as your run game coordinator, all his faults he has as a play caller, he was a really good running game coach for the Ravens and the Chargers. They always had a top running game. And like you said, he'd be an option to replace. Bevel was under Mike McDaniel the last 4 years, has been an OC in the NFL many, many times. In terms of guys with ties to Frank Reich, like that's more interesting to me in terms of like trying to project who will be on the staff. So I researched a little bit and asked around, and some names that came up, Kevin Petullo. He was the Eagles OC last year. I saw that comment you just put. Kevin Petullo was an OC for the Eagles last year. He's basically in the Tanner Engstrand thing where he got demoted. And I don't know that there's a role in that staff for him anymore. He's really close to Sirianni, so if he's staying there, it's for him. But they already hired a new pass game coordinator, and Petullo coached with Frank Reich from 2018 to 2020. So he'd be an interesting like pass game coordinator. Parks Frazier was on the Colts staff from 20 to 22. On Reich's Panther staff in 23, and he was on the Eagles staff right now, and Frank is close with Sirianni. So that's a coach with play calling experience. He's younger. He'd be an interesting one as like a QB coach or a pass game coordinator if he doesn't have a job with the Eagles anymore. Deuce Staley. He was a coach with the Eagles for a long time, but he was there when Reich was there as the OC. He was with Aaron Glenn actually in Detroit, and he was with Carolina in 2023 with Reich. He's been with the Browns the last 2 years, but Todd Monken's going to hire his own staff. And so Deuce is a potential like running backs coach, run game coordinator type of guy. An interesting one that I just found just from looking at old staffs that would be fun, that I think would get universal approval from Jets fans, is Kevin Mawai, the former offensive lineman. He was with the Colts staff in 21 and 22. So if you wanted to bring in a fan favorite, another former Jets player, played with Aaron Glenn, like that'd be a fun one to bring in as like the assistant offensive line coach. Outside of that, Sean Jefferson, I think, will be back. He coached with Reich in the past. I think Steve Heiden's going to be back. Outside of that, like this, Aaron Glenn has like 10 position coaching jobs to fill on this staff, offense and defense. And I think that's one of the bigger concerns I have. But yeah, in terms of what you said, if you want to like groom somebody to replace Reich, I don't know if Glenn can necessarily think like that, like, because you just have to get the best staff possible. But if you have Greg Roman and or Kevin Petullo or Parks Frazier on your staff, then you have some potential future offensive coordinators too.
Because I would think like with a young quarterback, like Reich is here for maybe, this is all, again, ifs and assuming, but they get like a big quarterback in the draft and Reich's here for a second season. Yeah. You wouldn't want to then in that quarterback's next season completely change the offense. We've learned in the, by watching the NFL over the years that like when you have a young quarterback, consistency is beyond like having an offensive line and some weapons. Like consistency is the most important thing. And although then you have Drake May, so I don't know. But yeah. One more thing on Frank Reich, and that is the quarterback, not the eventual hopeful franchise quarterback, although maybe, but the quarterback for this upcoming season. Does the hiring of Frank Reich give us any insight into what direction they go in the trade market or free agency or whatever they do to fill that spot?
You know, it's not as simple as I think some people think, just in terms of like the candidates we're all coming up with, because if you look at his Colts tenure, they had a different quarterback and every year he was there. And usually it was like a mercenary they were bringing in. It was Philip Rivers. Andrew Luck at the end of his career. It was Philip Rivers. It was Matt Ryan. It was Carson Wentz. I think they even brought in Nick Foles at one point. So it was all guys that like you brought in, maybe not thinking that they were going to be any more than what they had been previously, and kind of like pocket passers without much mobility. I did come up with some names that make some sense to me. One with direct ties in, which is Jacoby Brissett. He played for him in Indy. He's on the Cardinals roster still, so you'd have to trade for him, but he has the ties to him. He's a perfect stopgap guy. I think you have to draft one, by the way, either way. Kirk Cousins, he kind of fits the mercenary older quarterback mold. Him and Frank are friends, from what I understand, because they kind of bonded over their faith over the years. Tanner McKee is an interesting one because, again, Reich has a lot of ties to that Eagle staff. He kind of fits the physical mold. He's like a 6'6" quarterback. Davis Mills, another one I wrote down. I don't have any reporting on that. I just think he's like 6'5", more of a pocket passer. Mac Jones, who you said, Geno Smith is another one who I have my eye on. I've kind of had my eye on him anyway, but kind of a gunslinger. He's not really a mobile quarterback these days. So he'd be, none of these are exciting. All the names I just listed are not like, that's what I keep talking about. It's like hard to get excited about any of their quarterback options, but this is kind of the waters they're wading into this offseason.
But you did not mention Kyler Murray, which is a name we had talked about before. Yes. So do you think like because of Frank Reich, Kyler Murray is maybe not the fit?
I already didn't think he was a great fit. Like the only reason I had Kyler Murray in my mind is if Woody is trying to make a splash, which you can't rule out. And I know some people have pushed back on that characterization, but Kyler Murray is a name and it would generate excitement, whether it be good or bad excitement, it would generate headlines. And so that's why I thought that. But If you're going based on Reich's history, it doesn't make much sense. Even what Aaron Glenn likes in his quarterbacks in terms of their mindset, don't really think it makes a whole lot of sense. But, you know, it's who knows? Like they might still like Kyler Murray. And if Woody's like, I want the biggest name you can get, he's the biggest name available. So,
all right. So big picture coaching wise now, you have Frank Reich running the offense, head coach of the offense. Aaron Glenn doesn't have to worry about the offense in theory. Then on the other side of the ball, you have defense where Brian Duker is your defensive coordinator, but yeah. Aaron Glenn is kind of shifting his attention, right? He's going to be calling the plays there. So just from what you've, you know, learned, what does that side look like as far as like Duker's responsibilities and how much is Glenn digging in there and all of that?
Yeah, I'm curious to see how that aspect of it plays out, because as we've talked about on here, like it wasn't the plan at the start of the offseason for Aaron Glenn to be the play caller. So that is a new plan over the last couple of weeks, where he woke up one day after interviewing eight people and said, actually, I want to call plays. And then he interviewed somebody else and hired him. I get the sense that people do view Brian Duker in terms of like a coach who is pretty smart. I don't know what that, I usually a lot of times when it's a coach that calls, the head coach calls the plays, the play caller is more involved with like game planning and, you know, stuff in practice and situational football kind of stuff. And so that, I imagine that would be it. He has to fill out that staff though. He has to hire a new D-line coach. He has to hire a new linebackers coach. He fired two defensive backs coaches. Chris Harris, I believe, is coming back. But, you know, this defense was really bad at forcing turnovers and getting a good generating pass rush. And I think Glenn, based on his history, is going to blitz a lot and he's going to run a lot of man coverage. And so I imagine they're going to attack free agency at the draft looking for guys who are playmakers. I think a lot of these guys they drafted and added last year, while I think there's potential in a lot of them, like you don't blame them for AZ Thomas or Malachi Moore or Brandon Stevens. These guys did not have a history of like forcing turnovers in college or the NFL. They need to go after guys that have a history of it, or at least like, you know, you turn on the film, you're like, oh, this guy looks like someone who's going to force some turnovers or create havoc. And you need pass rushers too. But so that's why Arvel Reese is someone I've always had my eye on for number two. But in terms of free agency, there's guys out there, there's linebackers, there's safeties. If those are the two positions you're going to target, they need to get those guys in here. And Aaron Glenn in Detroit did a good job developing safeties, and Brian Duker was there for some of that. So if you want to be optimistic, you look at that, like the development of the defensive backs. Like Aaron Glenn maybe wasn't as involved last year as he will be this year. And if you believed in Aaron Glenn in Detroit, like that's where it kind of starts, is what he did with Brian Branch and Kirby Joseph and Terrion Arnold and all these corners that were really good for them.
All right. And they do obviously connection. Duker coached under Glenn back in Detroit 2021 yeah. to 2023. Let's look at the other offensive coordinator, Zach, the former Jets offensive coordinators whose stock on the rise. And it's just another one of those things where you look at the organization and you're like, well, maybe, and it's not fair. And actually you wrote, just to swing it to Sam Darnold, you wrote this week where you were like, everybody's killing the Jets for Sam Darnold because he's in the Super Bowl, but like, don't forget that he went to Carolina,
yeah,
and he wasn't good. And if he had stayed with the Jets, they would not have had the structure around him at that time, and he probably wouldn't have been good, and they would have lost him in free agency. There's plenty of reasons why, like, let's not laugh at the Jets for Sam Darnold being great now, because based on the road that it went, it took him a while to get to this point. But that said, Mike LaFleur is now a head coach in the NFL. The Jets obviously had him here. There were issues. A lot of it was the quarterback. That goes back to Sam Darnold, right? And they decided not to keep Sam and to go with Zach Wilson. And that was, it seemed like oil and vinegar, maybe, LaFleur and Zach Wilson. Yeah. But now he obviously got more experience with the Rams. And now he's the head coach in the Cardinals. And like the cherry on top is that Nathaniel Hackett may be going there as the offensive coordinator, which recreates Green Bay, right? A LaFleur head coach, assumingly calling the plays, and then Nathaniel Hackett is the offensive coordinator doing everything else, basically what Matt LaFleur and Hackett were with Aaron Rodgers in Green Bay. I don't think Aaron Rodgers is going to end up in Arizona though, right?
No. I can't believe Nate Hackett keeps getting these opportunities. Like, he hasn't gotten the job yet, but I know the LaFleur family is obviously really close with Nathaniel Hackett. I tweeted yesterday, like, does Hackett, like, when he puts on gold member, does he hypnotize people into hiring him? Like, is that, it's like, guys, I want to show you something. And it's like, there's clips from Austin Powers gold member. And in that time, they're hypnotizing him. And he's, and they're like, oh, you know, we should hire Nathaniel Hackett. Like, what, how does this guy keep getting away with it, as they say? So I'd say my biggest concern is that he looked at Nathaniel Hackett and thought, you know what, that's going to be a good coach to pair up with in Arizona. But, you know, we'll see what happens there. But, you know, LaFleur, he's not someone I really viewed as a future head coach when he was here. I mean, maybe like eventually if things have worked out, like I didn't get the vibe that like it was the very beginning of his time as an offensive coordinator. I don't think he did a great job like connecting with players at the time. I think he was very like in his office, like, you know, grinding tape, coming up with creative scheme. And I think he was better at that than we realized in the moment, maybe. And when he left, if you remember, like, it was a lot of it was in exit interviews. Players like didn't really love him at the time. And Woody took that a little too to heart and forced Robert to fire him. And I think players in retrospect have talked about privately, like, we regret doing that, especially once Hackett took over. So
you never know what's coming next.
Yeah. Yeah. But, you know, I will say, like, I think he's got a bright football mind. I would imagine he'd be able to build a pretty decent staff, at least because of his connections with his brother and McVay and all that stuff, if you remove the Hackett part of it. I don't know. We'll see. Like, I'm skeptical it's going to work out for him, but Arizona is not the highest pressure job. It is a bad ownership group. They're known for, like, being cheap and things like that. But, you know, he's inheriting some talent. They have Trey McBride and Michael Wilson and Marvin Harrison. And I think that they lost a lot of games last year, but most of them were like one score games. So that's coaching. We'll see. I don't view him as like a rah-rah coach. If he can just really Ben Johnson it up, Ben Johnson wound up being a better leader than I expected, but like really just be creative play caller and win games that way, maybe it'll work. But I don't know, like between him and Sala, like who's more likely to succeed? I don't know. I don't know. Cause LaFleur also is in the toughest division in football probably. So like that also doesn't help. So you have to compete against Sean McVay and San Francisco and Seattle. Like those are three of the best teams in the NFL year in, year out. So really tough spot to be in. And I'm curious to see what kind of leash he has, but I am going to be fascinated to see him calling plays again, cause he hasn't done that since the Jets. We'll see if he learned anything under Sean McVay and how he approaches things. And every time he succeeds, everybody will make fun of the Jets. And if he fails, then everybody will pretend like he was never part of the Jets because nobody like gives them the benefit of the doubt after the fact either. So,
yeah, Frank in the comments actually said, like, does anybody care about this stuff, the past Jets thing? And it's a fair question. I do think that, like, Jets Twitter and when you look around, I think there is a section of the fan base that the stuff resonates with. So I think it's...
Well, and the reason why we talk about it in that way is because... it's what people like to refer to as like the LOL Jets like phenomenon. Right. It's that everybody else in the NFL world likes to crap on the Jets when things like this happen, when they just remove all the context. Like everybody's celebrating Saleh as this next great head coach, is just removing like how disastrous it was at times in New York. Like NYJ Matt and NYJ Mike, shout out to those guys. They just did a podcast where they ranked the top 100 craziest moments of the last decade in Jets.
100.
It was like a 2.5 hour podcast. It was pretty... I didn't watch it from start to finish yet, but I skimmed through for some of my favorite highlights. And you look through it and they pointed this out, like a lot of the top 100 was during the Saleh era, specifically in 2022. So like that era, people are like kind of retroactively forgetting how bad it was, is what I would say anyway. But that, my point being, like, yeah, maybe Jets fans are tired of hearing about it, but everybody else is talking about it. So my point is more like there's plenty of ways to make fun of the Jets. And I think sometimes it's misplaced.
Yeah, absolutely. All right. Super Bowl. Let's talk a little bit about it before we say bye. And I will say, I'm not going to go in the names because it's a bunch, but we have one game left to pick in our pick 'em pool. And there are six people still alive technically. So make sure you get in there. There's a tie at the top. Two, and then there's a couple people that are one point back because of draws along the way. Yeah. So you get 1 point instead of two. So they can leapfrog. And then there's a series of people who are 2 points back. So technically could jump into a tie and then win the tiebreaker, which will be points in the Super Bowl. That's less likely because you would need all those like four or five people ahead to all get the game wrong. Assuming they all pick the right same team, but technically, mathematically, still a lot of people alive. The spread is 4.5, I think, as of today with Seattle, which I think it, correct me if I'm wrong, Zach, I think it actually opened at like 3.5 and quickly went to 4.5. I thought it would open higher and kind of, I don't know. I think when you look at these two teams, and maybe the Patriots like aura has an effect on this, but like when you look at these two teams and the rosters, like Seattle is the better team on both sides of the ball.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, to me, it's clear. Like, I think 4.5 is fair because Super Bowls get weird. But I think Seattle wins, and I think they probably eventually cover that 4.5.
I agree. And my only reticence is, number one, the Patriots just find a way usually. And number two, I think I was listening to Bill Simmons with Cousin Sal, the like prop podcast they always do. And they pointed out that the underdog has like covered the spread in like over the last decade. It's been like some crazy amount where they cover the spread almost every single time. So
yeah, it's not every Super Bowls time. Do get wild and like weird stuff happens. So I do get that.
I mean, last year the Eagles destroyed the Chiefs. So, and I don't know what the line was before that game. I imagine the Eagles were the favorite, but I can't remember, honestly.
I think the Eagles had to be, right?
So it's not every year.
The Chiefs limped into the Super Bowl. Yeah,
and part of why I agree with you, the 4.5 feels a little light just based on like what we know about these teams from the season, but it just shows you that bettors are high on the Patriots, maybe higher than we expected. And, you know, they have Vrabel, they have Drake May, who has struggled a little bit in the playoffs. And I don't know, I think it's going to be a good game, but I could also, if either of these teams was going to blow out the other one, it would be Seattle, I would say. Like if you're picking.
Yeah.
I do think it'll ultimately be a close one, but I would say at the end of the day, the Seahawks cover. And maybe that's just them winning by 6 points or something like that, but I think they cover.
Yeah, the Patriots need it to be ugly. Like,
yeah.
Unfortunately, like
their defense has been really good. Yeah.
Yeah, it won't snow in San Francisco. Yeah, yeah, I was going to say, I actually think that the Patriots defense does a good job on Sam Darnold. Like, I don't, you know, I don't see Sam Darnold in the Seahawks offense putting up 35, 40 points or anything. But I think we've seen over the playoffs when defensive coordinators for really good defenses, because the look at who this Patriots team has somehow beaten, right? The Broncos in Denver, the Chargers, they played good defenses. Now they're going to face the best defense in the NFL. And Drake May has struggled in the playoffs. He's done like just enough. He's made like the throw when he needed to. So credit to him for that. But against the Seattle defense, it feels like that ends up being the difference. But 2 weeks to prepare, right? So who knows? Maybe, you know, maybe they drop, you know, McDaniels draws up some great scheme for Drake May. But I feel like if the Patriots are going to win, May has to be regular season MVP caliber Drake May. And it's been a while since we've seen that from him against really good defenses here.
Yeah, I think the Patriots win. It's a Drake May Super Bowl MVP performance. I don't think it's...
And everybody, I would be shocked.
I mean, maybe like for people who are like my dark horse Super Bowl MVP, if the Patriots won, is actually Marcus Jones, who it seems like makes a huge play every time they win, like a punt return touchdown or an interception touchdown. Like I could totally see him doing something crazy.
Pick six from Darnold, plus he returns a kick.
Yeah,
something like wild.
That's like a fun, because it's pretty hard for a quarterback to not win Super Bowl MVP these days. Like it has, like the receiver has to have like two touchdowns and 100 yards.
Yeah, Cooper Kupp was the last Cooper Kupp, one, right?
Yeah.
I think.
Yeah. And that's why like Darnold is the favorite, and I get that too. I could see a JSN stealing it potentially, like if he had like 12 catches for 150 yards or something. But yeah, it feels like usually it's the quarterback that's going to wind up with it. And, you know, this is Darnold's moment. Like, you know, it's going to be really cool if we're watching the Super Bowl on Sunday and Darnold is hoisting up the trophy as the Super Bowl MVP. Like, I mean, the Jets are going to get roasted, as I said, but whatever. Like, it's really cool for him. And it's kind of a win for Jets fans because they beat the Patriots too.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, don't let the Patriots get number seven. And I mean, you can count me as a person who thought Sam Darnold was making a huge mistake when he left Minnesota and left O'Connell to go to Seattle and play for a defensive head coach. Like, I just thought, like, he's in the perfect place. He's in a place where quarterbacks thrive. You know, where he's going to leave, but he had to, you know, he kind of had to leave because of the situation there. And I didn't think it was going to go as well in Seattle, but he has shown us that he's a legit star quarterback, or I don't know, a star. Where is Sam now? Like top, obviously top 10, but I mean, top.
Yeah, I think he's definitely I'd have to run. Maybe we do this after the Super Bowl, especially if they win. But I think he's top 10. I mean, it's back-to-back seasons of him playing at this level, by the way. And he was even better for the Seahawks, even though he technically led the NFL in turnovers, but nobody held that against him. But if he wins the Super Bowl, wins MVP, I mean, he's done things that some of the NFL's best quarterbacks, both currently and all time, either did once or never. So like he will have won as many Super Bowls as Aaron Rodgers if he wins. So just like think about that for a second. Like that's pretty remarkable territory. And then you have to go into next season thinking of him. I don't know. Do you have to call him a top 5 to 7 quarterback at that point. Like, it's definitely in the discussion.
We can check in with Sando about QB tiers.
Yeah. And where, yeah, here's where he lands, honestly. Yeah.
Is he tier one? I assume he was tier two this year, not tier three. Like, he'd
I'm
be
not
like,
sure, actually.
If he'd be tier two or tier three. I feel like he'd be low end tier two going into this year. Of course, that just to, for people that don't know, Mike Sando at The Athletic every year puts out his QB tiers where he speaks to like a million people in front offices and ranks the quarterbacks like based on
He had him in tier three at the beginning of the season. Yeah.
Okay. Well, he's clearly tier two. And if he wins Sunday, maybe he's tier one. I feel like he'll still be tier two. Probably tier one is like you're legit Patrick Mahomes.
Yeah, because if you think about it, Jalen Hurts still isn't viewed as like a tier one, and he's been to two Super Bowls. So
generally, one is three guys, maybe. You know, it's a small.
Yeah, I mean, he had tier one. He had Mahomes, Burrow, Josh Allen, Lamar, and Matthew Stafford. So I'd say he probably won't break into that group. Tier two is Jaden Daniels. This was last year. It's probably going to change. Right. Daniels, Herbert, Goff, Stroud, Hurts, Mayfield, Prescott, Love, Purdy. Like, I feel like he'll safely be in that group.
Yeah, he'll be in that group. All right. Anything else?
Yeah, I think that should be good. I mean, they'll probably make some staff hirings between now and when we record again, and we'll talk about what happened in the podcast. And then we're in the fun season. That's when we're going to start, you know, wildly speculating about free agency, and I'll dig into some reporting, but it's more fun to just project who they might sign, who they won't. NFL Combine end of the month, free agency early the month after that. So fun stuff coming ahead, and I'm hoping Aaron Glenn can kind of turn around the narrative right now, because it's pretty negative. So
he's got coordinators. That's the first step. He had to get there. Everybody enjoy the Super Bowl. Hopefully Sam Darnold wins it and we can actually be, you know, happy about that. But enjoy the game, and we'll be back next week with some reaction to that news on the Jets. We'll celebrate whoever won the pick 'em pool and all that stuff. So we'll talk to everybody soon. Thanks for joining us.